You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, 7:07 in the morning. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. We got Jorge Rivas. He is a candidate for governor of Arizona coming up in the next segment. Remember, we do have our big happy hour party at K Bonita along with our friends at Nature Spa, October 29th, a Friday night. Should be totally fun. Let me know you're coming at wakeuptucsoncomments@gmail.com. Let's go right to the phones. We have our friend, President and CEO of Solidarity Healthshare, and he's calling today, usually on a Friday, but because of Southwest Airlines with they don't know how to schedule flights, a hurricane, a blizzard, he just got home today, so because it was never a sick out. So, Brad, welcome to the show.
Yes, luckily I flew American last week when I was in Florida, so I was able to get out of Florida. But we were there in Florida for a Catholic Medical Association meeting. There's about 500 docs from around the country, and everyone who flew Southwest out of Orlando got stranded there. And Spirit and Frontier were canceling flights out of there. So American luckily didn't do anything like that to us.
So, is this the funniest thing you ever saw? Is we know it's a sick out because of the vaccine mandates, but no one wants to say it. I mean,
well, I think that, yeah, I think what you do though, the Pilots Association can't say that, because if they go out publicly say it was a sick out, then that's going to breach all their contracts, right? And their agreements with Southwest. But, there's problems, but, we've uncovered a bigger issue. I don't know if you're ready to hear that yet.
I'm ready. Let's go.
Yeah, there's an article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, and last week I think Fox News picked up on it. Merck and Ridgeback Biotherapeutics are supposed to have this, new drug that they're going to put out that's supposed to, really cut back on the COVID, severity of it, right. But also too is supposed to come back and shorten the days, and stuff like that. So we did a little poking around on this. And first of all, this new wonder drug by Merck, the Department of Defense put in $10 million in the funding of this drug. The National Institutes of Health put in another $19 million. And then just this in June, the government just signed a $1.2 billion contract with Merck to provide these pills, to counter the COVID virus. And it's estimated that by the end of the year, Merck's going to make about $7 billion off of this product because they're going to try to give it away for free. So the kicker is this. Number one is there's a couple kickers here. The first one, it's going to cost about $17.74 to produce, and the government purchased it for $712. Forty times the amount. So let me get this right. So we had the federal government, our taxpayer dollars, through the Department of Defense, the National Institutes of Health, funded to produce this drug. And by the way, this drug was initially set up to treat horse encephalitis. That's the first thing it was used for. And now they're going to switch it over to COVID. And so the government's going to pay 40 times the amount for it. And you ready for the next thing? I had my doctors look at this. This new drug has similar mechanism of action. I guess that's a term you use when you have drugs and pharmaceuticals. A similar mechanism of action.
The old MOA. We call that the old MOA, but keep going.
Yeah. The same similar mechanism of action as ivermectin. It's basically ivermectin repackaged. And so they picked up $29 million of federal funding on this. And now they're going to sell it back to the government for 40 times the price, and it's basically ivermectin. It's not exactly the same, but it's the same mechanism of delivery, and it's going to treat the virus exactly the same way as ivermectin. And so now it makes sense why everybody was
crapping on ivermectin.
Yeah, because they got a new drug that they can make another $7 billion off of this year. So my prediction is this, not only is this a great, great, sign, I think this is going to be a magic cure. I think this is really going to cure ivermectin, because if you look at it now, all these vaccines, Pfizer is the global leader right now in this shot, it only works 60% of the time. So now we got a vaccine that's being produced, that a shot that's being produced that's actually, you know, spreading the disease. And now we have another drug company come in with a medical cure to solve the problem. So, you know, and when I was traveling in Florida last week, some of the airport says, "I trust science." That's the shirt I saw last week in Florida. And I was thinking, yeah, look at this. I don't know about you, but I don't know maybe we should trust science a little bit better, but I trust the politics behind the science, I should say.
So. Just think about it. I don't feel so bad. Remember, we used to make fun of the $378 hammer that the government would buy?
Yeah.
That's nothing compared to what you just presented.
Right. No, can I ask for this? Is this
Please.
Too much to ask the United States of America, Chris? And this is a rhetorical question. Is it too much to ask where there is one thing in the United States healthcare system that's moral and ethical? Can I just ask that on anything? When it comes to how these drugs are produced, how the vaccine has been manipulated, how the mandates have been manipulated, and don't even get me going on how billing works. You know, you as a member of Solidarity Healthshare know how crazy the billing is. You know, my son's going into ankle surgery tomorrow, and this hospital system, you know, wanted to charge us 300 to 400% above Medicare. You know, and still my son's ankle surgery is going to cost members of Solidarity $60,000 because this is the only surgeon in the Phoenix that we could find that operates on the specific area of my son's ankle. So we have members of Solidarity Healthshare that are pitching in right now to pay for medical expenses that are 200-300% above what Medicare is. So give me something, Chris, that's ethical and moral in our healthcare delivery system here.
It's so tough, right? I mean, I have I remember when the Obamacare thing was going on, I said, look, you have the worst partners in an equation ever, right? Patients,
yes.
Hospital systems,
right.
The government, and pharmaceutical companies. I can't find four worse groups of people to do business together than that.
Yeah, and it's interesting too. I spent some time with some leaders in the health insurance and health repricing industry last week, and you know all this problem. You know where the hospital systems are in bed with the insurance companies, and they work these side deals together. You know what? What some of these hospital systems are looking at right now. They're looking at acquiring insurance companies through third-party administration systems. So now you may have the hospital systems and the insurance company actually under the same umbrella. You know, and now look at the conflict of interest there. You know, so you have the payer system and the delivery system linked up. So who's going to monitor the cost on this? No one is, just like no one's monitoring the true cost of it right now. So, we'll keep pushing at Solidarity. We'll keep trying to find alternative solutions, you know, to keep protecting our members and still trying to drive transparency in healthcare pricing. And it's a pretty big battle going on right now in the industry.
So what's there's been a little bit of you guys have kind of been updating the model a little bit in the last 30 days at Solidarity Healthshare. Why don't you share about that with the Wakeys?
Yeah, the big issue we want to do is how do we bring in pharmacy, you know, into healthcare sharing ministry? And it's never been done before with the other health sharing ministry that's been around 40 years. So we're able to incorporate pharmaceutical sharing in there. And the other issue we looked at, too, is with COVID-19 is how do we expand mental health care for our members? Because we're getting a lot of members calling in with mental health issues, you know, because of the COVID isolation issues. So those are the two main things that we've implemented. And we've also implemented a different pricing structure. And so our members now can choose how much they want their annual shared amount to be. So like some members want their annual and shared amount to be $3,000, some $6,000, some $9,000, and some, you know, $12,000 per year. So we're allowing the members to decide, you know, which one of our options, you know, meet their budget the best. So with this new system, it's really going to support what we're doing on the pharmacy side and give us more leverage too on how we're fighting some of these hospital systems.
One of my friends who joined Solidarity about 3-4 months ago, he described it. He goes, it's very weird from going from a traditional health insurance company to going to this model. He goes, it's weird to have the organization actually in my corner.
Yeah. We're and that's something our members are starting to see a lot of it, you know, with my son's ankle surgery, you know, if you or me would have went in there on a traditional model of some other health sharing ministry model and say, okay, how much is this surgery going to cost? They would have came back at probably about $120,000 to $150,000 for this ankle surgery. But what we did is we had our repricing group reach out to this hospital system and start negotiating to get it down as low as we could. And then now we've leveraged this my son's surgery to try to get a better agreement with this hospital system to save other members money as well. And so it's we have to come together. You know, right now there's a huge barrier between the patient and the insurance company, and they're never going to be on the same page because they're arch enemies, you know, basically.
Right.
But if you look at it with solidarity in our members, we have to come together and help fight and this injustice that we see in healthcare pricing and work together. You know, and it's going to be troublesome at times, you know, when you got hospital systems that don't want to work with us because we're cash pay patients. Oh, and by the way, because we're demanding, how much does this actually cost you, hospital system? Those are kind of questions they really don't want to ask.
No, they like these prearranged bad agreements that, you know, forces me and you to overpay for everything. So,
yeah, exactly. So we're kind of trying to unsettle that. And when I was in D.C. a few weeks ago, we're starting to get a little bit more traction even on the Democratic side in D.C. To try to do something about this this opaque, you know, payer system we have in this country.
Well, elections are coming up in 12 months, so.
Yeah, can't wait for that. You know, it's always the highlight.
There's no atheists in foxholes, as we like to say. So,
exactly.
Brad Hahn, CEO, Solidarity Health Share. Check out solidarityhealthshare.org if you want to figure out how to pay for your health course in a better, more ethical way. And thanks for sharing that thing about the Merck drug that literally it looks like a repackaging of something that's like ivermectin, but now we're going to overpay 40 times per pill.
And both this ivermectin and this new pill, they're both used for horses, too, which I think that's interesting.
All right, I'm going to go crawl underneath a hole and never come out again after that discussion.
I'm glad I could always liven up your day and make it more inspirational.
This is why we want you on, man, to bring this kind of good meat. So we appreciate what you do at Solidarity, and we love these conversations. So keep doing the work, bud.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Brad. Take care, my friend. All right, we come back. Jorge Rivas running for governor. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30, The Voice. All right, welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson show, 10:30, The Voice, local news and talk. Just got a message from the district manager from Cisco Foods. I'm in trouble again. I am happy to welcome to the Wake Up Tucson show, Mr. Jorge Rivas, who is running for the Arizona governor. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me. It is an honor, a pleasure. And before anything, I want to say that I'm very grateful for your invitation. I want to thank all your audience for listening. And more than anything, I want to thank God Almighty for this opportunity.
I thank him also. So here you are. Let's start from the beginning. So a lot of people do know you because you and your family supported President Trump, Latinos for Trump. You caught a lot of heck for it. And then a lot of people stepped up and said, hey, our friends Betty and Jorge aren't going to get canceled. And then kind of became a national story. But I want to start from the beginning because it's important for people to know, where is Jorge Rivas from? Where were you born? We're going to start at the beginning.
Correct. I'm originally from El Salvador, which is a small country, the smallest country in the Western Hemisphere. It is in the Central America part of the continent. And I migrated to the States during the mid-80s while the Civil War, when the communists were trying to take over the country. The situation got real bad. My family, my extended family, my dad, my uncles, and we were victims of the war, the Civil War. My dad, younger brother, who served in the military, he got killed, you know, while in combat. Some of my cousins and also my half-brother also got killed in combat. So there was a time when my parents said, you guys will not be able to keep going to school. And even if you go to school, there won't be no jobs because everything is being destroyed. And at that, around that time, the U.S. government under President Reagan was giving people from El Salvador the opportunity to migrate to the United States as a political refugee.
Okay.
And I was still a teenager when I arrived. So to answer your question, I am from El Salvador, and I'm thankful now to be a naturalized United States citizen.
Matt, how's our time? Because I know I went long in that first segment. I want to make sure I cut off. All right, let's do this. I went a little long in my first segment. So when we come back, I want to talk about you coming to the States and building your life with your family, and then get to the why did you decide for your first political run for office to run for the state of Arizona governor. So
okay.
All right, go to RivasForGovernor.com if you want to find out more about what's going on with Jorge's campaign. And if you want to donate, five, he's a clean elections candidate, so signatures and fives are always welcome if you want to support this young man. You can also go to his restaurant up in Catalina, where they're also collecting signatures and fives. So you're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Jorge Rivas, Chris DeSimone, Wake Up Tucson. All right, you're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Welcome back. City Insider Richard Studwell coming up at the top of the hour. And then tomorrow, of course, Schweikert, the sports intern, Hogan Gidley. And then Friday is Rocco for Food Friday. And then we have the authors of Gastro Obscura, the best food experiences across the entire planet. We're doing the whole damn planet now at Wake Up Tucson. So we're hanging out and catching up and introducing you to some of you, Jorge Rivas. He is a candidate for governor. Go to RivasForGovernor.com to find out more. So Jorge, when you escaped El Salvador, you escaped the socialists. We're talking about socialists now in 2021.
Right. But
no. Wherever you go, they follow.
Yeah. Not good. Not good at all.
So you arrived in the States. I know you said you landed in California as a teenager.
Right.
Moved to Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And then talk about meeting your wife and building your business, because that's a big part of the Jorge Rivas story.
Yeah. Back in the mid '90s, I was working as a manager at a restaurant here in Tucson.
Which one?
It was a Hometown Buffet.
Oh, okay.
River and Oracle Road.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
And my future wife came in, and I saw her, and I said,
"You fell in love over the Salisbury Steak Station."
Right. Right. And by that time, I already live in the town of Catalina. You know, over 25 years ago, and I had a small single wide mobile home. And after my Betty and I got married, we decided to start looking to open a small business. And we found out there was a lunch wagon, a food truck for sale. We did not have the money, but I had a pretty good credit. So I used money from my credit cards, you know, like go to the bank and get, okay, $2,000 for this, $2,000. I mean, the interest rate was pretty high, but I already have the skills and the knowledge how to run, you know, a restaurant, how to run the food business. So going into running my own lunch wagon was, you know, easy for me. And we started going to, I don't know if people are familiar with Saddlebrook.
Sure.
Saddlebrook at the time was, you know, starting. It was with a lot of workers. So we went there every morning and served food to the workers from around 8 a.m. to around 2 p.m. And in the evenings, so we'll go and do and be a waiter at the local clubhouse in Saddlebrook. So to me, it has been very exciting or very humbling to be able to live the American dream. Because after a couple of years of running the wagon, we said, this is a good business. I know we're going to make it work. And let's start into buying a piece of land, an empty piece of property, vacant property on Oracle Road. And after running the wagon for 9 years, we went ahead and while we were getting permits to build our own building, we rented a small restaurant. Well, we were sharing a space with a small restaurant.
I remember that space.
Yeah, and we were there for 6 years. And then in 2011, we were able to move it on into our own building. And at the same time, you know, raising my wife and I, we were blessed with three boys. So while working, raising our kids.
You do have. I've met all your kids. They are great kids, and all got their university or getting their university education.
Yeah, two of them are already out of college, yep. And my youngest one. This is his fourth year. Very blessed that they're being turned out real good boys. My youngest one just got his what they call the golden cord that they tassel. Is that
yep.
what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah. He got his third one this year. He has my oldest one also got an average of 3.9. My youngest one, he's 4.0 average for the last 8 years. So we're blessed to live the American dream.
So your life changes. Your beloved gets up at a Donald Trump rally with the soon-to-be president at the Tucson Convention Center.
Right.
Talk about how that started to change your life.
We find out that the Donald Trump was running for president, and I like him very much. His ideas, he loved for the country. And at that time, he was being attacked. He was being labeled as a racist. It was the especially Spanish media was saying Latinos do not like Donald Trump because he's racist. And talking to some of my customers, I knew that a lot of Latinos support Donald Trump. I supported Donald Trump. And when we found out that he was coming to Tucson, to the convention center, I told my wife, I'm going to make a sign that says Latino support Donald Trump. And I said, honey, when you get there, run to the front and show the sign to Mr. Trump. And he saw the sign and he goes, Betty, well, he didn't know her name yet, but he goes, come up here, with the sign. And and he liked the sign, which I knew he would because, I wanted to show him that not everybody, what everybody was saying or the media was saying about that he was a racist and Latino, did not like him was not true. There's a ton of Latinos that supported him and they still do because we love this country. We want the best for this country. And But unfortunately, the side effect of that is a lot of people threatening our business, threatening our life, threatening our security. But in a way, I think that I was the right person because I was ready for it. In a sense that I came from a country, from an area.
You're an early pioneer of the cancel culture in a way, right? Because
right.
They came after you because you and your wife, as Hispanics, as Latinos, supported.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
right? And the thing that people realize is I thought you were very classy. You handled it in a good spirit, right? You didn't get angry.
Mm-hmm. Not at all, because I knew the Constitution gives citizens the right to support whoever they want. So I knew that I wasn't doing anything illegal. And also I knew that, what my parents taught me is that you need to stand up for what is right. Always be on the right side of any issue and stand up for that. If you believe that you're right, stand up for it. No matter the consequences, at the end you're going to become, triumphant. So we stood our grounds as we said, no, I think the future president is right. We need to follow the laws. We need to implement the laws. If applying the laws at the proper time made him racist, well, that's for ignorant people to say that. But for people that understand that applying the law at the right time, at the right moment, and not choosing when to apply the law, then if they call you racist or they call you, whatever else, then that's sad because people are not being truly Americans, what the Americans stand for.
So my last question before we go to break, and we'll do one more segment about running for governor, is talk about the emotions that you felt when people that you never even knew existed drove hundreds of miles to support your business as the press and Democrats were trying to cancel your family and your business. Talk about the emotions you felt when these people came from all over the West to come support you.
Thank you. Yeah. One of the things that made me feel very proud was that people, like you said, that did not know me, they stood up for what we also were standing up for. That made me feel that being an American was as as awesome, as badass as he could be. And I thank him. I thank him all from the bottom of my heart for standing up for us, for supporting us. And now more than ever in this tough time, we need to come together, be strong, and realize that there is only one America. And someone like myself, who came from a very place that it was full of hate, violence, et cetera, America is the land of opportunity, the land of freedom, where the American dream comes alive, and it's so great to be part of it. I just have so many great feelings about it, and thank you all for your support.
All right, let's go to break, Matthew. When we come back, we'll talk about Jorge running for governor of the state of Arizona. Jorge Rivas, RivasForGovernor.com. Find out more and find out how do you support him in his campaign. So wake up, Tucson, 10:30 of the Voice. Perfect choice. Song of the Patriot by Johnny Cash. Here we go. Look at the ESQ. He's killing it today. Killing it. All right. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show. We are catching up with Jorge Rivas. He is running for the governor of Arizona position in fall of 2022, about a year from now. He's got a primary in next August. Jorge, so here yes, you sir. Are. You got a heck of a story, right? You get to this point in life. We had an insane, not-so-great election last November. And you decide for your first run for a political office is governor.
Correct.
Now, a lot of the people who are the naysayers or big government people would say, well, why would you run for the biggest state in the state government as your first time out? What does Jorge Rivas say to those folks?
One of the things that come to mind is that after talking to many of my customers and friends, they say, we need to elect good people to public office. After what we're seeing right now, that supposedly many people voted for someone who had experience in the political world, and we can see the disaster that is happening all the way around us. I mean, it's no one can deny it, you know, how bad it's getting.
Right.
So we need, one of the comments that I hear is that we need to elect people that have common sense, good moral values, that are honest, believe in God, believe in family, and people that you can trust. And so that's one part of the equation. The other part is the part of personally, my personally opinion, it will be that, or my comment is that if you are like someone like myself, who started from the very bottom, and here in the United States, I've been able to own my own business, my own house, have a great family, having my kids go to college, be successful, then one of the things that you feel in a great way is gratitude. You feel so thankful for what you have, for what you have achieved. And at the same time, you hear so many people, so much negativity out there that this country is bad, it's hateful, it's horrible. And you say, no, that is not true. This is a great place. So you think, okay, what can I do to make sure that the opportunity that I have, or that I have for so many years, will continue to survive, will continue for other generations, for my kids, for your grandkids, for those people to have the opportunity that I had. So what better way to make that come together, to put myself out there and say, I want to help, I want to throw my name out there, and I want to make not only Arizona, but America to keep continuing being a great place to live, a great nation, a great state. So
what would you like to do as governor of Arizona? To make the place better. If you want to provide these opportunities that you've had for others, what can you do? What would you like to do as the governor of Arizona to make that happen?
One of the things that I hear is that younger people, let's talk about, in this case, let's talk about, especially about minorities, are saying that they feel left out, that they are not achieving the American dream. And two things can come to mind. One, when my kids were going to high school, they're saying, oh, we're learning a lot about mathematics and things that they didn't feel that after they were out of high school, it was not very helpful for your everyday life. So I think we need to, luckily for my kids, they were able to, they wanted and they had the ability to go to college, but it's, many kids do not have the opportunity or they don't want to go to college. So they have all this knowledge in their head about algebra and mathematics, but if they don't go to college, then it doesn't do them any good. So I think for kids who do not want to go a 4-year college, education, how about if we help them to get a two-year college education? You know, like getting how to be an electrician, how to be a plumber or anything like that, where they can make a decent amount of money.
So they are starting to do this. JTED is growing a little bit, which of course is the technical training that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So that is happening, but you want to expand it to more people?
I want to expand it to more people because it seems like people are not feeling that they're making enough money to achieve the American dream. Also, there are other areas that we can work on. Like, we know that we're running out of water. So we need to work on water for sure, because I know there are places already around the state where they're not letting build homes or new businesses because there's not enough water. So we need to make sure that we work on that, right now. We cannot wait 5 or 10 years later, because then once we run out of water, what's going to happen? I have experience where people do not have water, where you wake up in the morning, there's no water. This we're talking about, places like El Salvador or many other countries, and life is almost impossible. You don't want to be in that situation.
What's a possibility we could do? We're going to run out of time. What's a possibility in the world of water to make that situation, improve that situation?
I believe we can make an agreement with the government of Mexico and start, working on the desalination plant in the Sea of Cortez. Because if we just, if we're talking about groundwater, many places already are running out of groundwater. So we need to look for real solutions.
All right. If you want to find out more about Jorge, go to RivasForGovernor.com. If you're coming, and you go to his restaurant, of course, Sammy's Mexican Grill, up on Oracle Road on the north side of Catalina. If you want to support him there, he has petitions and things that you can, and of course, give him his $5 donations for clean elections. And then he will have a table at the Lincoln Day dinner that I'm going to be the MC of the dinner at, and you can meet him there also. So, sir, thanks for running, and I'm getting a lot of reactions from people. Listener Robert just said, what an amazing story. This, and that, love this, and then he said, brass cojones. So everyone's inspired by the story, man. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you very much, and I will give you 100%. We'll give the people, the voters, the opportunity to say, okay, do we want the regular, big corporation, big, same old politician running for office, or do we want something from someone who really loves this country and cares and be honest and hard worker? I work 12, 15 hours a day for the last 30 years, and there's not going to change if I become a governor. You will see me working every day. We're working very hard but more than anything, very being honest.
All right.
I think that's important.
Good seeing you, my friend.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
RivasForGovernor.com.